So let's pray and start. Father, we thank you for this session. We pray that you be with us, help us to understand, grant us illumination, revelation, knowledge. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, you are welcome once again to this edition of School of Marriage. The first one after we were rudely interrupted by coronavirus and then the lockdown, you know. So now we are back, you know, we are back in session. So today I want us to, we've looked at a couple of things, you know, like from the beginning. We talked about the maturity that is needed for marriage. Then we talked about the issue of compatibility. Then we talked about living and cleaving, if my memory serves me right. Yes. And today I want us to talk about tend and keep it. Tend and keep it. You know, and tend, T-E-N-D, T-E-N-D, and then keep it. And the scriptural reference is Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. Genesis 2:15, where God told, let's read it. Then the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. To tend and keep it. That means to dress it and then to keep it. Now this is Adam, this is God putting Adam in a garden. And the garden was planted by God himself, you know. And when God does something, we would have thought that anything God would do will not need any addition by man, you know. So if God planted a garden, then why would there be a need for a man to tend it and keep it? Actually, tend and keep it means dress it and cultivate it. Dress it and cultivate it. But I'm also using it to also, I'm also stretching it a little bit to also mean, if you tend it, then you can keep it. If you dress it, then you can keep it. If you cultivate it, then you can keep it. So, in other words, I'm looking at, or we are going to look at, what is involved in keeping a marriage or keeping a relationship. We need to understand the scope or and the scope of the work involved, so that we will appreciate the relationship, because there's a lot of work involved, you know, and we need to know the scope of the work involved. Now, Adam had to keep the garden and dress it, tend it, and keep it. Now, when you go to, let's open to Proverbs 27, verse 18. Proverbs 27, verse 18. Okay, then it also says, whoever keeps the fig tree will eat its fruit. So he who waits on his master will be honored. Whoever keeps the fig tree will eat his fruit. So to keep the fig, if you want to eat the fruit of the fig tree, then you must keep it. And the labor, the patience, whatever is required for the fig tree to be kept must be applied. Then you eat the fruit thereof. Now, one thing we need to understand is that, number one, there is nothing that God will give you that will not require you working on it. Not working on it to bring you to perfection. The working on it actually brings you to perfection. Brings you to a certain standard where you'll be able to handle the thing well. If God gives you a gift, for instance, that gift is from God. But you, the one handling the gift, when you decide to work it and you decide to use it, now you grow in your usage of the gift and how you can handle the gift, so that the real reason why the gift was given will be realized. The same thing with marriage, the same thing with relationship, everything. Because if you want to enjoy that marriage, then you must understand that you have a responsibility to work it and to keep it. People sometimes look at the fruits people are enjoying and they like it. But they don't draw closer to ask them, How did you come by this fruit? Because like I always say, you can't copy fruit. Then also, when you see fruit, you must know that seeing fruit means process has gone on. Seeing fruit means a seed was planted. Seeing fruit means process. Seeing fruit means times and seasons. If you see that a mango fruit, it has ripened, and you see people plucking it and eating it, now you must ask yourself, did they just see that? Did he just get the fruit to eat? No, I mean, it was planted. It went through process and all that. And then it got to the fruit-bearing stage. It started bearing fruit. It started getting ripe. Then people plucked it and ate it. So, if you are seeing fruit and then you like, your mind should not be on the fruit. Your mind should go to the seed. And your mind should also go to the process that the tree has endured or the one who kept it has endured. Now, many people are excited about relationship, about marriage, about this, about that. But some people don't appreciate the work involved. That when you see a couple and they seem to be happy with each other, and they say, oh, this is an ideal couple. Oh, they are happy with each other. Oh, I believe they are enjoying their marriage and all that. Now, that is good. It's good to have role models and mentors. But you must ask yourself, or you must also know that they did not get that thing just because they were lucky. There's nothing like luck. People sometimes believe that, oh, if you are lucky and you meet the right person, then it will go well for you. If you are not lucky, it will not go well for you. Now, you can meet the right person and still not be able to enjoy the fruit because you did not tend the garden, you did not keep it. So Adam can be in Eden, surrounded by all these precious and pleasant trees and fruits, and still Adam will not be able to keep it, will not be able to enjoy Eden because he doesn't want to keep it. When there are weeds growing in the garden, he will not keep it. And so the weeds will outgrow the trees, the fruits, and it will affect the fruits and all that. And God has given Adam everything, but he's not enjoying it because he's not prepared to tend it. But God said, if you tend it, then you can keep it. If you bestow labor, then you can keep it. Then the second scripture, he said that if you take care of the fig tree, you see, then you can eat its fruit. So if you attend to the tree, if you want fruit, if you're a farmer and you want fruit, you will know that you invest in a tree. If you are a farmer, like Doreen is into farming, she'll tell you that if you want to get your crops and you want to get them ready for export, you have to go through some process, true or false. Yes, and you have to bestow labor. Sometimes you go through seasons of anxiety just because you want to make sure that you don't invest and then lose your investment. You see, it's the same thing with a relationship, a marriage. So anytime you think about marriage, relationship, think about a garden where you have an orchard, where you have fruits, where we plant fruits, and then think about the time it will take for the plants to grow, for it to bear fruit, and for you to start enjoying the fruit. So it is work. So it is labor. So it is diligence. So it is investment. So every relationship, every marriage, there's work to do. You know, do you know that relationships must be serviced to ensure that they are evergreen? And this one applies to all manner of relationships, whether it's between you and your parents, whether it's between you and your siblings, you and your friends, you and your fiancé, you and your wife, husband, you and your children. All relationships must be serviced. When they are not serviced, they become stale. They become stale, and then they become monotonous. And then they also become, what's the word? They are not fresh. The freshness in a relationship, yeah? Let me use marriage as an example. When you get married, before the marriage, there's an excitement. Oh, wow, I'm getting married. And then you have expectations, hopes. I'm going to get married. Oh, I'll do this, I'll do that, I'll do that. So I'll be called Mr. So-and-so. I'll be called Mrs. So-and-so. And you are thinking about all those things. You are happy. Naturally, everybody has hopes and is happy. It's like the foolish virgins and the wise virgins. When they were waiting for the bridegroom, I believe they both had hopes. I mean, they were discussing among themselves, hey, when the bridegroom comes, we will dance, we will be happy, we will do that. But when they were sharing all those excitement, they had forgotten that it's not the excitement that is going to keep the bridegroom. It's how you can tarry, you know, and your lamp, because you have to go forth and meet him. So you have to be alert, number one, to know exactly when he's coming so that you will not miss the timing. When you hear that he's coming to, your lamp must be burning to ensure that you can see your way forward to go and meet the bridegroom. That is when, after that, then all the excitement, the chicken and the rice and everything will come. But if by the time the bridegroom comes, your lamp is not burning, you know, in the first place, you won't have access to the party. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. Okay, so now let's say that you are getting married, then you get married finally. Now, the freshness in the relationship or marriage, it has a very short lifespan. Every relationship, when it starts, there's freshness. There's what we call dew. You know, dew is, in the Bible, is associated with youth. When you read that's 110, right? 110, it talks about the dew of youth, the dew, freshness, the freshness. That freshness has a short lifespan. The reason I'm saying that is that it will not last. You must have a mind that you must propagate that freshness. Yes, that's your responsibility. So it's not like, oh, I have feelings. Oh, I feel some way when I see him, when I see her. Oh, I'm excited. No, if you want to continue to have those nice feelings about the person, those nice thoughts, you must deliberately create it and decide to stretch it, decide to perpetuate it, decide to keep it going. That is the work. So the freshness in every relationship, number one, relationship must be service. Number two, the freshness in a relationship, it has a very short lifespan. You know, that's why in the Bible you see phrases like, go back to your first love. Go back to your first love. Because that first love is as much as it is legitimate and it is nice, it has a short lifespan. And after the initial experience, then you will see that it's time for work. Now, that is when people are shocked sometimes, because people have a wrong impression that, oh, the way I see this couple and the way they are always smiling and they are always happy and everything, they are they are very well adjusted to each other. Oh, then it means that, oh, when you marry, it's like every day is like that. And you are always feeling high, mountaintop experience, you know, the way like we are excited about each other. Oh, that you will not even have a day where you will be down and no. So people get a rude shock when they marry, because they are not prepared. Their minds are not prepared that initial feeling has a short lifespan, and you must recreate it, and then you must ensure that it continues. That's why the Bible will say, go back to your first love. It said, remember the first things, and begin to do the first works. So as you do the first works, then the first love experience is also what? It's also coming. Now, in every relationship, the work depends on the two people in that relationship. Now, the work does not depend on one person. The work depends on the two. It takes two to tango. If one person slacks, you will see a defect in the relationship. If one person slacks, you will see. So every working relationship, working marriage, the two people are assiduously working to ensure that the marriage works. That's how it is. Every working marriage, It means that two people are working. They are, both hands are on deck to ensure that the relationship is fresh. Because the freshness is not something that is there for a long time. Now, you know, sometimes we have phrases like, oh, the honeymoon experience is over. When a new government comes to power, then we say, oh, he has 100 days. Then after 100 days, we say, now the honeymoon is over. When we went to sixth form, there was a phrase like switch lower. Switch lower. Called lower six, the first term, you will not be tested. There's no exams. I think the whole year or so, there's no exams. So lower six, you call it switch lower. You are just enjoying yourself and all. That's when you've come from our old level. You've come back to sixth form. You are enjoying yourselves and then all that. Then upper six, then you start taking tests. So that's the initial stage. The initial stage is always free, it's always exciting, but that is not what will keep the relationship going. And that's what people don't understand. The initial stage, when you get married, for instance, your honeymoon period and all that, in fact, the week before marriage and after marriage may be the initial stage with all the excitement and all that, but that is not what will keep the marriage. That's why if your marriage is not founded on a solid foundation, you will get a shock after the honeymoon experience. Or some people's honeymoon can last for 1 week. Others can last for 1 year. Others can even last for 1 month. Others can last for 1 year. Depending on how it is. But by all means, it will end. And when it ends, that's when you will now settle to work. That is when, if you don't have this thing that I'm talking about, then this knowledge, then you will be shocked. Because maybe you thought that, oh, what you see in movies, that's the real life. That's the real marriage. You know, the ideal, what you read about, what you see in movies, you know, there are gaps. Those gaps, they need to be filled by knowledge from scripture and knowledge from godly people. That's how you fill those gaps. The movies will not show everything. There are gaps. My little daughter, my Krista saw an advert of a school on TV. And she was worrying me, Daddy, I want to go to this school. No, I will go to this school. Anytime the advert comes, it's like, oh, this is my school. I want to go. So one day I asked her, I said that, why do you want to go? He said, oh, because that place, there's so much fun. When you see it on the TV, oh, they are having fun. You see that it will be a nice school. Then I said that in a typical day, let me show you. Typical day, they are not doing this all the time. I said, they've just picked some scenes and they've put together those scenes. It's spliced. It's a montage. Different scenes put together and they are showing to create an effect or to advertise. But when you go to the school, you will see that it's just like your school. Where you go for morning assembly and then you come to the classroom, there are boring moments where teacher is not in the class. There are times when teacher is out of the class and we are all playing and all that. And there are times where teacher is there and you are sweating, you are hot. And there are times, you know, and all these things are part of. So when I explained to her, that was when she understood that, oh, okay. Even that one, she didn't want to understand. Because as far as she's concerned, what she has seen on TV, that's the reality. Now, that's the wrong picture we always get about marriage. For instance, you look at a couple and you see them as your ideal couple. Oh, this is an ideal couple. Now, you see that they are very well adjusted. You know, like my wife and I, we are very adjusted, you know, well adjusted. But it's not like we are always all the time together. We are doing this. No. No, for instance, I traveled on Monday, came back on Tuesday. I came back to Kumasi on Tuesday. And I had to go for retreat on Wednesday to Friday. You see? So, it's like the whole week, I have not been in the house till Friday. Okay. So, if, let's say, it's like you think that, oh, it's like the whole week we are just around each other, our arms around each other, and you know, we are just moving, going sightseeing, going for tour. We go here, go and sit here and eat and chat and go and sit here. No, it's not like that. there are gaps that you need to get close to be able to fill those gaps properly. So be careful of pictures and scenes that have been put together. It's likely you will miss the gaps if you just look at a picture like that. Now, you realize that it's labor in a relationship. And when I say tend it and keep it, I'm talking about, number one, paying the price. There are certain things that constitute the price we pay to keep a relationship going, including marriage. There's a price to pay. You can't, it's not just a matter of luck. No, it's not luck. We believers, we don't live by luck. We live by light. You see, in him was life, and the life was the light, not the luck. Luck is success by mistake. Our lives must be governed by light, knowledge, revelation. So that you know that this is what I have to do, then you do it. Then you see the results thereof. Not that, if you are lucky, you get a good marriage. No. Whatever you are doing, even if it is your academic life, it's not dependent on luck. No, we believe in favor. We live in favor, but favor, you have to know the place of favor and the place of responsibility. The two are not mutually exclusive. The two can exist together. You can be favored and still be responsible. Esther was favored. Esther, the favor aspect of Esther's life was how she was discovered, not how she was able to get the attention of the king. That one was not, it was part of it, but she had a part to play. I get to me. How an orphan girl who is a slave can be picked to represent, to take part in a beauty pageant, that's favor. But when she went before the king, how she was able to please the king, that one, she was not just favor. Even before they could go to meet the king, they applied oils. They applied myrrh for 6 months and applied different oils for 6 months. Just to meet the king for one day, one night. 12 manner of oils for 12 months before meeting the king. Then she knew what to put on to get the king's attention because, Haggai was the eunuch in charge of the king's harem. So Haggai loved Esther. She found favor in Haggai's eye and Haggai taught her the things that the king will like, the colors, the whatever, the king, this the kind of woman the king is looking for. So she was groomed. So it wasn't just favor that made Esther king. Favor was part of it, but responsibility and work was also part of it. So when she got there, and also you remember Mordecai, her uncle, her cousin, who took care of her, also invested some knowledge in her. Mordecai was actually pacing back and forth, when Esther was in there. That's a responsible parent, he went there to find out. He was just waiting back and forth, making sure Esther was there. So it takes more than favor to have a good marriage or any good relationship. It takes more than favor. It involves paying the price. Now, when I say paying the price, number one, there's the price you have to pay, number one, to know and understand the concept of marriage. That knowledge, there's a price to pay to acquire that knowledge. Now, before you learn how to drive, you pay a price to go and learn how to drive and then to acquire a license. The reason is that you want it. That knowledge is not just knowledge. That knowledge will translate into many things. For some people, that knowledge will bring them money. To learn how to drive will bring them money. For some people, it will bring them employment because there are some jobs when you know how to drive, it's an added advantage. So that knowledge, paying the price for that knowledge is not futile. In the same way, it's amazing that people think that people spend the time and pay the price to acquire knowledge to handle things. But they don't also spend the time to acquire knowledge to handle marriage. And they think that marriage is just an appendage to life. And so they don't spend it. Now, this thing that we are doing, this school of marriage, people can say that it's a waste of time. I mean, why do you teach? Why don't you teach people about missions? Why are you having school of? We also teach about missions, but this one is not about mission. This aspect of our lives is also important. It also warrants spending time and acquiring knowledge. For instance, I tell you all the time that I read at least 25 books on marriage before getting married. Not only on marriage, on parenting. You know, because I was involved with children in children's ministry. Then I needed to know how to handle children. Then also I wanted to know this thing that we call marriage. What is it? You know, I want to know. So I spend money to buy those books, and I still have many of them there. Now when I mentioned 25 books that I read on marriage, I was surprised that when you go to send me a message and ask for the list of the 25 books. And she said, I want the list of the 25 books to go and buy. You know, so I took time and I gave her all the list. 1 to 25. There were some that I had read. I read after marriage. I didn't add the one. All these things, 25, are the ones I read before marriage. So the books that I have, you will see the dates, that those dates are before 2004. Because I got married in 2004, you know, October. So when I gave her, I asterisked the ones that I still had and the ones that I took from people to read, which were very few. So later on, then other people also came demanding the list. And then I also gave it to them, you know, that this is a list. So if you go through, you go and get the books. Now there are other books that are in the system, you know, but these are the ones that I read, you know, to prepare myself for that. So the investment in that knowledge, if you have to buy a book, that will help you to understand. Now, if you have to take advantage of a class like this, it's also an investment. Because you are investing time. You could have done something else with your time. You are investing time. So that's number one, paying the price, you know, to know, understand. Because what we are saying here, we are talking about marriage from the context of the Bible, not from the context of culture, from the context of the Bible, how God instituted the marriage covenant and what was God's purpose for instituting that covenant. We need to understand that. Now, the second price that we have to also pay is the price of getting to know who you have to marry. That's also another price you have to pay. You know, and that one, it depends on many things. For instance, you have to know, you know, these days, people just enter into a relationship and then maybe they don't even pray about it. You know, I, for instance, I didn't pray about marriage. I didn't pray about marriage. If I tell you I spent time praying about marriage, no, I'll be lying. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't pray. What happened to me was that it was, I believe that, you know, I was totally sold out to God. Totally. You know, totally. I was totally. And then it came. So, but it doesn't mean that you should not pray. For some people, you must fast and pray. Yes. For some people, you must fast and pray to ask God. Should I say yes? Should I say no? You must fast and pray to ask God. So that's also another price. Now, all these things are the part of the price you pay. Now, when it comes to you yourself, there's also a price to pay. Because in looking at relationship, and I say we all come in our raw state, there's no relationship that doesn't need work. So it means that to connect with another person, There's a price to pay. There is labor. You will see that your rough edges, if there's anything that will serve as a crucible for the reshaping of human character, I would say it's marriage. It's a crucible. And it's like when you enter that enclave, what happens is that your rough edges will manifest, and your rough edges will be shaped. You see, iron sharpens iron. So you two people coming together, you are two raw stones coming together. You have rough edges. Now, as you rub and rub and rub and rub, then your rough edges are being shaped. But some people, upon the slightest manifestation of something that is scary, then they withdraw. Yeah, they withdraw. That, oh, I can't make it. If you do that, then it means that you are a window shopper. You are a window shopper in a relationship. Like you want an ideal situation. Now you've forgotten that you yourself, you are not ideal. You have rough edges. And so that sometimes you must bestow that kind of labor to know that, okay, if I'm certain that this is the person that I want to marry, then the next thing is that there's work to do. Relationship is not fun. It's not for fun. I've always said that if you don't have an idea or intention to marry the person, don't start a relationship with the person. Relationship is not for trial and error. Relationship is for building up each other. It's for helping each other to prepare or laying a solid foundation for the marriage. It's not like, oh, we are now these days you see people say, they are in relationships. Okay, are you going to get married? When are you? Oh, no, it's not about marriage, it's about relationship. Now, so why are you in the relationship? If it's not about marriage, then there's no need to be in a relationship. So the destination is marriage. And then we set the destination. And then we are working towards this destination. We are helping to build each other up for the destination. That's our goal. So we set a goal and then we are working. You can't just set a goal and then you say you go and sleep. No, you must work towards the goal. So you come, you meet certain things. But if you know and you admit, you see that for any problem you identify in a person that you are with in a relationship, it reflects back to you. It also exposes a weakness that you have. So if you say the person is too, let's say the person is somebody who is too domineering, it also exposes a weakness in you. Maybe you are not humble enough. I don't know what you get what I'm trying to say. That's what I mean by iron sharpening iron. Let's say two people. Then your verdict on your partner is that, oh, he's too noisy. He's too loud. Oh, he's annoying. He's annoying. Now, that is, you think it is a weakness that you are seeing in him or her, but you don't know that it's also exposing a weakness in you. Your tolerance level is also very short. You can't tolerate people for long. You don't have long suffering. You can't suffer long. Are you getting me? So that is also a weakness that you see. If let's say if I want to see whether you are cut out for children's ministry, I know exactly how to spot. I will see, because I've been in children's ministry for 14 years. So I'll know. I can bring children right now here, and I'll give you like 20 to 30 minutes. I'll know all the children teachers here, and I'll know your tolerance level with children. I get TV. There are some people they can't tolerate children at all. They can't. their tolerance level is zero. like Peter and the disciples, when Jesus was, the parents were bringing the children, say, hey, go away, software, that kind of thing. But look at Jesus saying that, oh no, let them come. And then he was hugging them, they were putting them on his laps and lap and all that. His tolerance. So every weakness you identify in somebody that you are in a relationship with, think about it and ask yourself, how does it reflect back to me? You always have to be doing that. Oh, this person is too slow. My partner, oh, he's too slow. Oh, she's too slow. She's too slow. Now, that can be a manifestation of your impatience. Because, so, could it be that if you were a little bit more patient, you would have seen her in a different light? Or him in a different, but because your patient level is not commensurate with, it doesn't match her character or his character, then you conclude that, oh, I can't work it. No, we are not compatible. Because, this relationship, we are not compatible. We are two different people. We are not compatible. We don't see eye to eye on anything. But if you see that, it will reflect back to you. So there's a saying that when you see a mistake in somebody, think of two in you. And don't add a third one by jumping to conclusion. So there's a price to pay. Now, number three, there's no love without labor. If somebody says, I love you, and the person does not bestow labor, it is not love. True love comes with labor. If you want a picture of true love, it is Jacob and Rahel. Jacob and Rahel. Now they mention it Rachel, right? Okay, so Jacob and Rachel. That is a picture of true love. Why? Because he was prepared to labor for her for 14 years. Because he truly loved her. And Bible says that those 14 years, they seemed few days in his eyes because of their love. You know, so when there's love, so in the Bible, love is proved by labor. That's why he said, for God is not unrighteous, Hebrews chapter 6, verse 9, verse 10. For God is not unrighteous to forget your work, that is faith, and the labor of your love, in that you minister to the saints and do minister. Labor of love. So love is always synonymous with labor. If you don't, you are not prepared to bestow labor, then it's not love. All these things about, you have to do this for me and for me and for me and for me. You see, one of the things that, and I said it depends on the two, not one. Don't get in mind that somebody must be doing something for you. But you don't have a mind to be doing something for somebody. So you have become like, oh, everything should be centered around me. And you don't have time for me. Okay, do you have time for her or for him? You. So you don't do this. Fine. Do you also do it? Are you getting me? It's labor. It's not a matter of you are sitting down, then someone is coming to serve you. No. Are you also going to serve the person? It's not. There are some impression that must be corrected. You know, like somebody was telling me that, oh, he left a relationship because the lady did not know how to take care of a man. So I said, okay, why did you leave this relationship? I said, oh, she didn't know how to take care of a man. And I said, okay, why are you in a relationship with this other person? Then he said, oh, for her, I can see that she knows how to take care of a man. Then I said, how do you take care of a man? Now that's the question. How do you take care of a man? Then he said that, oh, well, you have to know how to get my things ready. I have to pack my things, iron my shirts, wash my clothes, my food, at time, everything. And I said, Look at all that you've said. You have never said anything about you doing something for her. You see, that selfish mind is what you are entering marriage with. That is got to be it's got to revolve around you. You have got to be the center. Everything must revolve around you. He must do this for me. He must do that for me. She must do this for me. She must do that for me. There are some people, if their wives will not even go and bath, the woman must fetch water and go and put it. There's nothing wrong with that. But can you also fetch water and put it there for her to bath? That's my only question. She doing it for you, no problem. But can you also do it for her? Or you think that, oh, it's the woman who must do this to the man. That's a deficient mentality. That's why many people can't commit. They can't commit because they are afraid. Because they say that, oh, that's why people can't even tolerate women who will go to school. You know, if you're a woman, you go to school. That's why people, they can't accommodate that because it's like, so then who will serve who? So who will serve who? I get TV. Yeah, so that selfish mentality, we must remove that thing from our minds. And you must know that you are going in there to improve upon somebody's life. If both of you have a mindset that I'm here to help you, I'm also here to help you. It's not only the woman who is a helper. The woman is a helper in a certain sense. The man too is a helper in a certain sense. Because Eve was created to come and help Adam. And Adam saw that he needed that help. It was a timely intervention that God made. But remember, Eve was taken out of Adam. And so for Eve to be herself too, she has to be brought back into Adam for Adam to cover her. You know, that's one thing that people struggle with these days. The reason why now we have many marriages on the road, you know, because people don't understand this principle. Eve was taken out of Adam. For Eve to find her place and to be fulfilled, she must be brought back into Adam so that the two can be one. That integration, that is where the problem is. So there are many people, the marriage is like this. The man is going, then his rib is taken out. Are you getting me? His rib is taken out of his side. So imagine somebody going and then your rib is taken out like that. The rib is not properly integrated. That is the whole concept of submission. Submission is not subjugation. Submission is being properly integrated so that you enjoy, you see, you become fulfilled. If submission does not make you fulfilled, then it's not submission. Then it's subjugation. True submission from God's point of view is to make the woman fulfilled, make the woman happy, make the woman protected, make the woman covered. That's true submission. Because if God is to replace or to bring back Adam's rib, it will fit perfectly into Adam's body. So that people outside will not even see that they are two, they are one. So there will be no sticking out. When you see sticking out, it means that the proper place for the rib has not been found. So it's sticking out. No, even some people sometimes struggle with of these things. So there's a price to pay. If you turn the relationship, if you invest time into a relationship, then you'll get the fruit thereof. Now, the next investment you will make into any relationship, whether it's marriage, whether it's your fiancé, whether it's family, whether it's partnership, or all the ships, is the investment of time. T-I-M-E, time. So, this one, you see, the very act of the relationship needs time. If you don't have time, please don't enter into a relationship. If you think you don't have time, if your time is not enough for you, and you wish you had 48 hours, please don't don't enter it, because if you don't have time, you will be frustrated. Because it is something that also it also needs an investment of time. Time is an oven into which we put activity to get a finished product. You can put any activity into time and get a finished product. If you are a student, the difference is the time you put into your studies. That's what makes a good student and a bad student. It's time. The time you put, anything that you do, you commit time, you will see that thing growing. You don't have time for the business, it won't grow. If you don't want to pay the price and spend the time, be at it and be involved and be there. Forget about it. It won't grow. Because you are not spending time, devoting time into it. Maybe you are working two jobs. Okay. And then one job is your own job. Then you are working, let's say, in a government establishment or somewhere where you are a salary worker. Then you have another job by the side that you are working to create more income. Now, the amount of time you spend being the government salary worker is going to be greater than the amount of time you spend on this job. Believe you me, this job will suffer. So some people, they get to a point where they say, no, I must now stop this one and focus on this. Focus on this. Somebody's wife started a school. Then he was working with a bank. And at the point, he realized that he must resign from the bank and focus on the wife's school. So, because he saw the potential, so he resigned from the bank and devoted his full time to the school. And within a matter of 3 years, the school had changed. And he was telling me, so it's time. So in the relationship, you must also invest time. And nobody has time. Nobody has excess surplus time. Because before you met the person, you were occupied 24/7. Whether you were even not doing anything, you were occupied. Do you know that sometimes we think we are not doing anything, but we are doing something? You are never idle. Even when you are sitting there like this, you are thinking. You know, or something. You know, somebody can say, I don't have time. No, I can't do so. Why? I'm going to sleep. That sleep is also an activity he's going to carry out. It takes time to sleep. You know, you have to get time to get enough sleep to sleep for you to feel that you have really slept. You need time to sleep. Not this short sleep that you wake up and then, you know, but you know that you have really slept. Sometimes we have stages in sleep where you sleep, you get up, then you go back to sleep. You see that you shift the gear. You sleep the year, second year sleep. So you really need time to sleep. We all don't have enough time to sleep. True of us. It's true. You don't have, but if you had your way, if you really want to exhaust the full complement of the hours of sleep, you need time. That's why they say that, the adult's average hours is eight hours. How many? 8, then children is 10, you know, 10. But how many? 8 hours. You don't get 8 hours to sleep. You don't get it. So it means that nobody has time, so you must create time. You must create time. That's why we have something like a scale of preference. We have priority, that we prioritize things. If something is important to you, you make time for it. You have to prioritize. Sometimes you see that you literally have to force to create time to do something. Otherwise, it will never get done. It will never get done. You have to force to create time You know, there have been times when I have to force and create time for retreat. Because when I want to go on a retreat, there are many things I consider. I consider the home. When I was going for this retreat, it was very painful for me. I was even telling my wife, I feel some way because I just came to this, and then I'm going. It's like, if I had my way, I would have just gone on Monday, then straight to the retreat on Wednesday, so that when I come, then I've come. So you see that if you want to create time, you have to inconvenience people, you inconvenience other things to create the time to do what you want to do. I have to put it at there was a point where I was planning a retreat. I really struggled to get one day, because if I wanted to do that thing, then it means that I'll have to do it on a Saturday. I have to go to Accra on Monday, come on Friday, then come and do a retreat on Saturday, come to church on Sunday. Meanwhile, Saturday too, I'll come for school of ministry. Then Sunday, I'll come to church. Then Monday, I'm going back. And so I said, I did. So one day, I just created time. I said, no, this day, I have to go, hook or crook. That was a retreat that I went and then I slept. And that day that I wanted to go for the retreat, surprisingly, all my favorite retreat places were booked, fully booked. Grace Retreat, Mount Olives, booked all the guest house there, booked everything. So I had to go to a place where it will cost money, you know, for just one day. Only for me to go and decide to, okay, just relax and pray. And by the time I realized, it was 5 p.m. I had spent many hours just sleeping, you know. I didn't have any dream, no vision, nothing. I just slept through the retreat. When I woke up, I was very sad. I said, hey, the devil is a liar. I mean, look at how I struggled to get this day. And this is what you do to me. You come and blow air and I sleep. But later I realized that it was God's mercy, because my body needed to go on break. And when I woke up, I was very, very refreshed. Like, it was like my whole body had been worked on, refreshed. So maybe that was the retreat. So I had to create time. So in the relationship or in the marriage, time is of essence. You have to create it. Certain things must be done intentionally. Listen, certain things must be done intentionally. What phone is that? Certain things must be done intentionally. We need to bind that bind that phone. A small phone is making noise like that. Certain things must be done intentionally. For instance, you can't just, if let's say, the if you want to have smooth communication, I tell people that now, if you see that naturally, it is not flowing, you can start by intentionally creating something that will help the two of you to communicate. Sometimes you have to go with loss before you enter grace. So let's say that communication is a problem, then you have to make rules concerning that. Till you get acquainted with the art, then you enter into grace, then you flow. So there's issue, okay. He doesn't call me. She doesn't call me. If I don't call, he or she will not call. If I call and I don't get him or her, she will miss my call. He will not return. She will not return my call. And these are all issues with regard to communication in relationships, sometimes even in marriage. Now, you can start off by coming together and agreeing that let's intentionally create something that will help us to communicate. Let's draw a timetable. 3 times a week, we'll call and then we'll talk. You will call on Monday. I will call on Wednesday. Then you call on Friday. We are talking for 15 to 20 minutes. When you call, it's your responsibility to engage me for 20 minutes. And me too, when I call, I will. So before you come to call, prepare your points. I'm telling you, prepare your points. Okay, I'm going to talk about this. Then from this, I'll move on to this. From this, I'll move on to this. So I've exhausted the 20 minutes. Now, you may think that, oh, this thing is too mechanical. Yes, that's the law. It will help you. It will help you to enter into grace. By doing that, you acquire the habit or the skill of the mind that, you know, being mindful of the fact that you have to communicate. You are quiet. You are quiet. Then it will flow naturally with time. Because now, the two of you, you are now coming together and you don't know each other. You don't flow with each other naturally. It will have to pick up as time goes on. There are some people, as soon as they meet, they somehow flow. This conversation, initiating it, is not a problem. When they meet, the first time they will meet and all that, it's like they flow naturally in conversation. You know, like the first time I met my wife, the very first time we met at the dinner, we were coming, we're in the bus and then we're conversing. Now we conversed from the dinner place to campus. Then from that time, I will go to a place and then we will converse. We will talk. And you know, like we are moving from topic to topic. Usually we're flowing. Now, if you are not flowing like that, it does not mean you are not compatible. See, you shouldn't jump to conclusion that, oh, that means we are not. No, it means that you must bestow more labor and you must work the communication. That's why I said you can start by making rules. Let's talk. Now, there are some areas that maybe you may not have the same, there may be points of conflict. So you know, reserve those areas. You don't talk about those areas. Some people are really into politics and sports and all those things. And, you know, but general communication that, you know, make time to communicate. So when I meet you for a relationship review, there are some questions I ask you. One of them is that, in a typical week, how many times do you hear from each other? When you answer, I'll ask you, on a typical day, how many times do you hear from each other? Who usually initiates conversation between the two of you? Who is the one who usually initiates conversation? Now, somebody will say that, oh, me, naturally, you know, I'm not a talking type. But you have to work on yourself. You don't have to say that, oh, this is a matter of temperament. Personality. See, let me tell you something. If that's why I don't believe in categorizing yourself under strict categories of temperaments. I am sanguine. I believe in those things, but I don't believe it. Nobody is a pure breed. We are a blend of temperaments. Are you getting me? So you don't have to say that. As for me, I'm melancholic. You know, we don't like talking and, you know, you have to learn to talk. You have to learn to talk. Your personality can be influenced by what dominates your thinking. It's not a matter of, oh, I understand the natural part. Naturally, there are people who are reserved. It's natural. But what about when God says go and preach? How do you find that energy to preach and to say this, that? But when it comes to talking, then you say that, oh, you say, oh, this one is anointing. No. No, the anointing is there, but you see, God gave you energy to do that. In the same way, you can also learn to communicate and not hide behind the excuse that, you know, I don't like talking. Oh, you know, I'm not good at. Let me tell you something. If I were to go by what I was, my real, or what I thought was my personality, I will not be the talking type. Because I was very quiet. And like I've told you, I could, even if you come to my house, I could stand at one point with my Walkman for hours. I'm just standing there. I was very happy with myself. Yes, I'm very happy with myself. I can stay in a room for 1 week. Because before even I got married or whatever, no, like, I was a retreat person. I could go for a retreat. I could stay. I can stay. When I went for a retreat recently, I was just in the room. I didn't come out. I didn't even come to see the sun or to see the moon or to enjoy a cool breeze. No. From morning to evening, the same room, four corners. Morning to evening, I was there. Morning to evening, I was there. So a person like that, I realized later on that this thing, you can't apply it to everything. Otherwise, you make a mistake. Because you make a mistake of thinking that because you are happy with yourself alone, then you become selfish. So you can't relate with your environment because when you were alone, you were happy. There are some people, they are not happy when they are alone. They want to relate with other people. You know, so you can't keep them in a room. They'll even get sick. But you must learn to change that thing. So I had to learn to change that thing so that I can also interact. I can interact with my environment. Even the kind of work I'm doing. If I tell you, see, when you see the work I do, you might think that my temperament is that. But that is my original temperament was like a monk. My original temperament is a monk. That's my, if I say my original, that's what I was. Like somebody who would love to be indoors, stay indoors, just lie down, maybe read. If I get books to read, I don't mind. I can stay there, just enjoy the books. But the kind of work I'm doing, for instance, it's not like that. It's the kind of work that is very rough. Sometimes, you have to move at very short notice. Sometimes you have to adjust within a short time. You have to think on your feet. You have to solve problems. You have to initiate moves. Take risk. Do this, do that. I was not that kind of person. I'm telling you the truth. My world is books. If you put me in a library and you lock me, I'm okay. My world was not fast moving things. Do this at the same time, control this, do this, give instructions here, listen there, go here, meet a deadline, do this. That was not my world at all. I had to adjust. That was when I realized that everything you can adjust. You don't have to limit yourself to your temperament and say, oh, this is my temperament. You can adjust. When I was starting work, my greatest fear was that I would not be able to meet right to the occasion because there was a great conflict between my nature, my temperament, and the kind of work that I was going to do. Because my temperament, and I had programmed my life around my temperament. So in the morning when I wake up, I will read New Testament. In the evening, I will read, in the morning, Old Testament. Evening, New Testament. In between, I will read books. That was my world. So then, I realized that you can change. So you can change whatever temperament. When you are given leadership position right now, if we're a leader, you cannot say that, my temperament is, my temperament, I'm the reserve type. So when there's a need for you to speak, then you can't speak. No, you can speak. You must be able to speak. Sometimes you confront issues that you must confront, not because you are the confrontational type, but because leadership behoves you to confront the issue. So you can always change your temperament. Now, there are some people, for instance, who will say that, as for me, I'm not the sober type. No, you can be the sober type. When there's a time for soberness, you can be sober and you can reflect. Hello? So you see that the price to pay is not for your partner, it's for you yourself to change. Change what you think. God, Bible says guard your heart with all diligence, for out of it flow the issues of your life. That word issues is the same word for boundary. The boundaries. So when I enter your heart, there are boundaries. Boundaries in your heart. Your one side seems to like you are an academic. Your one side, you are a pastor. Your one side, you are a leader. Your one side too, you are this. God can remove the boundaries. And so as you go, you can be enlarged in certain areas. God, when they appoint you as a leader, you can lead. You can lead. But you may tell yourself that, oh, I'm not that type. Oh, you know me, I'm the shy type. I was teaching some people. I said that, look, you say that you are this type. There are some people, for instance, when you do something to them they don't like, they can't tell you that they don't like it. They can't confront you that they don't like what you are doing. They will just keep it within them. Some of them, they will be okay with time. Others will never be okay, but still they can also voice out that, oh, this and that and that. So I told them that you must be able to confront issues. If you can't forget about it and be okay, and you must tell the person, then you must find a way of telling the person. And don't say that, oh, I'm that type. You are not that type. You know all the labels we put on ourselves? They were put on us by people and by circumstances. There are some people, if you want to know your original self, look at who you were when you were before 5 years old. If you can remember. Before 5 years old. That was your real temperament. Before you were 5 years old. Were you that kind of reserved person that you think you can't do anything? No, it was people who placed labels on you and made you to think that and created imaginary limits and limitations for you to the extent that they started affecting your life. I'm telling you, sometimes I sit with people and it's like I expose one or two things to them. And sometimes they are like, oh, then I tell them that, look, this is not who you are. You have just accepted labels and you are living with labels. Because let's say that, you know, when we are living with children, every child is different and unique. Now, when you have children and there's one that is very outspoken and she's always talking, then you start saying things like, kwanotum, 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 upekasa, kwanotum, chabu, chabu. Do you know what you are doing to the child? You think you are helping the child. No, you are killing that natural flair for outspokenness that God gave him. You are killing it. But in our society, they will create the impression that to the child who doesn't talk, who is always quiet, then the parents will make that mistake of saying, oh, we're very quiet. No. The fact that this person is noisy doesn't mean that he's bad. So our society has been said that when you see a person who is soft-spoken, you think that he is good. That is why we are always swindled. And because we think that people who are soft-spoken, we think they are good. And we even think they are humble. When somebody can, the person is like, this guy there is very good. He's very a humble brother. His brother is sound. When somebody is like, oh, Charlie, how? Hey, like Pastor Tew, when he comes, hey, hey. He's, oh, this brother is not humble. This brother is not how, because of the outspokenness, it's a mistake. So we tend to gravitate toward the people who are like that. And I've seen that it has cost many people a lot of, because some people came like that and you felt that they were good and humble, and then you released things to them or you entrusted things to their hand, not knowing that they were not. And some of you can be the quiet, the soft-talking type and still be very good and okay and humble. So it's not in the tone of the person. So when a person is outspoken, there are some people, they lighten up the environment. Okay? They lighten up the environment. Now that, you don't have to look down such a person and say that, these people, they are not serious. Oh, they are always joking. They are always laughing. Oh, he's not serious. Now, somebody was listening to my message. Then she was telling another pastor, you know, and the pastor knows me. So the pastor told me and mentioned the lady's name. And she told the pastor that when she was playing my message in the shop, then somebody came there. The person was, I don't know the message, but the person stood there and said, who is this? Who is preaching? Who is laughing? And who is just, you know, like, then later on, as he stood there for the time, he said, hey, he's saying some things. Because I realized that you will never get one message that I've preached that I did not laugh. And it's not intentional. If I, when he said that, then it occurred to me that, then any message I've listened to myself, I see that there's laughter. I see that as I'm talking, either I will laugh about something or you will laugh about something. It's not intentional. Now, it doesn't make me light-minded. Are you getting me? No, I can share deep things, but I will not make my face light. I can share deep things. Can teach deep revelation, but you will not see from my face. You know, like this, you shouldn't laugh. This is serious business. It's the word of God that is coming, and you don't laugh, and you have to be serious. Life is serious. Life is war. Life is war. You have to be serious. There's a time for seriousness. When it comes to seriousness, you must be found to be serious. But you can't be serious all the time because you think life is serious. There are some times that you might even laugh at your own self to even not get heart attack. I'm telling you, to even not get heart attack, you must be the type that laughs. You laugh. So you create time to do what you want to do in a relationship. You can draw a timetable. It's not all the time that you have to be talking on the phone. Make time to meet. Create it. We have to meet and talk. You know, and we have to choose the place and what that meet and talk. We have to sit down and talk, discuss things. You have to pray. You have to make time to pray. Make time to study the Bible together. Make time, you know, like all these things, investment. Now, I can't go finish all. Let me take the one, then I'll allow for question. Okay. Now, investment, you have to also pay a price, invest money. It's also an investment. And here, by this, I'm not saying that you have to be pumping money into the relationship. No. But I'm saying it's going to cost you money also. Because buying a gift, you use money to buy a gift. And you must be able to buy a gift from time to time. Not an expensive gift that you have to go and borrow money to go and buy, then you are going to eat Gary soakings and you don't have money, then you go to borrow money, you want to impress me. No. But at least it will also take money. something little to show that I'm thinking about you. You know, for instance, on occasions, like maybe birthdays or some occasions, or maybe out of the blue. He says, it's not always that you, sometimes you can save money, some spare money to go and eat in a restaurant. Yes, some spare money. It's not all the time that, like, you are always, you know, some especially like some of the guys, you know, like, the only thing that they will all pay for is water. Even that one, the one that they put on their head, you know, it's so bro. Oh, man, back. Meanwhile, the person doesn't even, that is not even tested, you know. Oh, man, back. Because that one is some few coins. No, you must gather the car. You know, like, I'm not saying it's a balance. I get you. But that is also, for instance, let's say that, okay, we have to meet and talk. Now, you don't meet in a bedroom to talk. It's not advisable to meet in a bedroom that you're in a relationship. So, let's meet and talk. Oh, come to my house. I come in my bedroom. Let's discuss things. No, that's not advisable. Okay, so now let's meet in a restaurant. Okay, let's meet at this place and talk. Where we can enjoy the breeze, air, fresh air. Then we are talking. Maybe we are talking over some popcorn or over something, chewables, drinkables. Then we are talking. At least that one, it's not every time, but that one must also come in. You must make time, create time for that. Look at your schedule and intentionally create the time. Because if you don't do it, you see, you'll be there, then you'll see the relationship rusting. Do you know one thing is that nipa hon efuno? Yes. So how do you maintain the relationship for it to be evergreen? You have to be changing things, moving things around, creating things, you know, around, so that it will be evergreen. Sometimes you need to change things to be evergreen. It doesn't take much effort, but it takes sacrifice. You have to sacrifice. You have to make sure your schedule. You have to make sure you create anything that is important to you. It's on your schedule. It's something you plan, and then you make time to do. When you want to communicate, when on the phone, choose a time where there will be least distraction, and make sure you give it your attention. I mean, give the communication your attention. Not a time where it's like a lot of distractions and it's like a lot of this. No. Look at an opportune time where there's least distraction and then give up your best. Now, there is this aspect that is a bit dicey, but let me touch on it. Sacrificing relationships for your relationship. The reason why I'm saying is dicey is that there needs to be a delicate balance. You need to walk a delicate balance. It's very delicate. So if you don't take care, you can easily destroy things. But when I say sacrificing relationship, your relationship, what I mean is that there are some times that this relationship, they will meet at a point. When they meet, one must give way for the other. So let's say that you are in a relationship leading towards marriage. It doesn't mean that you cut off your female friends if you are a guy. It doesn't mean you cut off your male friends if you are a lady. But you create mutual friendships. So your friends must become my friends,
made up of mutual friends.
But there will still come a point where this will meet this, and you have to sacrifice one for the other. It can come in the area of your time, in the area of your attention, in the area of your resources, whatever. But by all means, you must know that there will come that time. But listen, never put yourself in a position where you have to choose between your parents and your relationship. Number one. Number two, your spiritual family and your relationship. Never put yourself in that position where you have to choose between the two. Now, if you are not married, then it can happen that you will choose your parents above your relationship, because maybe they are not in support, and you can't marry without the consent of your parent. Otherwise, you must do everything in your power to convince them. Prayer and fasting, everything you can do to convince them to accept. If they don't accept, you can't marry without their consent. But when you get married, now you have gotten married. And even in marriage, you don't have to place yourself at a point where you choose between your parents and your spouse, because you will need both relationships. And you need to service each of them separately, but then you will need to know how much resource to put in each. You are talking about your past and your future, your heart and your blood. So you need to know how much resource you have to put into each of them. But when you are not married yet, your parents' voice can overturn your relationship. So that's why I say you have to walk that delicate balance. You have to know how to work your way through, pray your way through, how to involve other people so that your parents will come to understand, for instance, this issue of tribe. Now, your parents may not accept the tribe that your partner is coming from. But you also, after prayer and everything, you see that this is the person that you have submitted the thing to cancel everything, you settle on that person. Then you have work to do. But never, never, never marry without the consent of, or without the blessing of your parents, your natural parents, and also your spiritual parents. Because your natural parents, they will give you the blessing you need and the authorization you need to marry. Maybe your spiritual parents will give you an impartation, but your natural parent. So you must not get to a point where you say that because of relationship, okay, now I'm not talking to my mother or my father, because my mother says she won't agree for me to marry this guy, or my father says he will agree for me to marry this girl. No. But you must work it. Pray. The two of you can pray. Pray. I believe so much in prayer. The heart of a king is the hand of God. Pray that God should let them know. God should touch their heart. Involve people. Talk to people who understand the issues. Pastors, counselors. Let them get involved. Let them get your parents to consent to it. Then you are free. But when you marry, then that one you've married. Now, even before you get married, your relationship will define your circle of friendship. Because you know that definitely, let's say that, you know that you are going to get married to this person. Everything is planned out. You are on your way. And you are settled. You are settled. You are going to marry. Now, because of that journey, it will define your circle of friendship. You will start learning how to be circumspect in your circle of friendship. Now, if you are boys, for instance, boys, that to help yourself, you must start redefining that boys thing. You must start sanitizing that relationship. We got some people, even when they marry, they want to be boys. Oh, let's go and hang out. Boys, hang out. Oh, we are going to the pool. Boys, we are going to sit down here and hang out. We're going to this. No, when you marry, you can't be doing boys. When you marry, it's boys and girls. You and your spouse. Boys and girls. Guys and girls. Not boys. Not 3G or whatever. So, you must start defining, sanitizing certain relationships before you marry. You must start, if let's say, you, your family, your whole family depends on you for sustenance. Number one, if you don't really take care, you can't marry. Yes. Let's say that your whole family depends on you. Let's say you are a man, okay? Or even a woman. And you are now the breadwinner of the family. So your parents depend on you. Your siblings also somehow depend on you. And you want to get married. If you don't take care, number one, the marriage, you will delay in marriage. Because sometimes, even I've seen instances where I'm praying for people and then there is a deliverance. Then you see the Spirit saying that we will not let him marry because so you will not marry because if you marry, they have the belief that your attention will be turned to your immediate family. So if it's frustration, those spirits, they will put frustration. In fact, those human beings will sometimes tie you so that you will not marry. And some people, their marriages will delay. They are men, okay? They have everything it takes to marry, but you see their marriages delaying because they are breadwinners for their family. Now, if you have been able to break free from that limitation, then the next thing to do is to adjust the relationship you have with them so as it will not affect your marriage. So you have to plan ahead. If it is money that you give them, then you must also in your mind create a certain fund or something that you can also accommodate your family, your spouse, and everything, you know. Because when you marry, your responsibilities will increase. And then also, apart from taking care of the home, you may also have to take care of the people who were your dependents. So, you must streamline those relationships so that it will not create any problem. Because I read a statement somewhere. It said that when your son gets married, and he still performs his role that he's performing to you as a parent, thank his wife. Because it means that, but if he stops, he said, blame his wife, because his wife has come to pollute him that you shouldn't give money to your family. You are giving too much money to your family. So stop it. Sometimes it's not the wife who is polluting the man. It is just the responsibility of the marriage that is restricting the man from doing what he used to do. So before you marry, then you must reduce your hand small, so that they will be comfortable. So, number one, you cut out unnecessary spending, waste, so that you know that you don't, then you streamline how you relate with them. Number two, then you also attend to the very important ones. You know, all that means that you are creating room for the one who is coming to join you, so that they will not have any issue with her. This one is for people who are breadwinners. Their whole family depends. It's very dicey, very, very dicey. Sometimes they marry and their marriages don't work because of that. Because their siblings are against their spouses, their parents will turn against them because it's like, oh, bye, you know, one man, no man swatted. Meanwhile, it's not like that. It's because of the responsibility. Apart from that, your close friends, you must begin to also sanitize that relationship. When you are close friends, friends that are close, now, as soon as relationship issues come in, you must know that your friendship is going to be weakened. And that is normal. You have to accommodate that. You can't, for instance, let's say that, okay, you are very good friends. Let me use two guys. No, let me use two ladies. Because guys usually don't have that problem. But ladies. Now, two ladies are very good friends. Very, very close. Then, one of them enters into a relationship. Now, you know what is going to happen? The tendency is that one of them, if she has not entered into a relationship, she might think that you have betrayed me. Sometimes it gets so extreme that one of them can actually be jealous and will be doing everything to make sure that this relationship will collapse so that I can have, because they become used to each other, they enjoy each other's company. But now another element is coming in. Now, if the guy who is coming, if that guy happens to be somebody who is also very possessive, then you will see that it will take its toll on the friendship. And you will see the two ladies will be fighting, and they will also be fighting the guy. So what should happen is that when one enters a relationship, you must be mature enough to respect boundaries. Now, it's not a marriage, so you cannot say that, No, but at least respect privacy. That's why I say that every friendship or relationship where your individuality is submerged is not a bond, it's a bondage. You must be free to be who you are. Even though we are best friends, you must be free to say, I don't like this, you like this. I don't like groundnut soup. But you like groundnut soup. I respect that. But you can't force me to eat groundnut soup because you like it. That means that I'm submerging my individuality for you. It's not a marriage. Even in a marriage, you still have your likes and dislikes. It's not like you are submerging. No, you just have to achieve a compromise. A compromise. Because when you marry, you realize that you like the fan. Your wife doesn't like the fan. So sometimes we are prepared to go without the fan to please her. And sometimes she too are prepared to let at least you put it on for some level that will not disturb me. That's my wife and I. I'm talking about my wife and I now. That's what we have been doing. Because me, I like fan. But she doesn't like fan. So for some time, I've not slept on the fan, but she also allows me to put it, because sometimes when I come, I have to put on the fan full so that I will be dry, properly dry. Then before I sleep, then I put it off so that we all, or I'll put it at one, the lowest. You know, so I cannot change, and she cannot also say that, because for her, if she sleeps under a fan, it will affect her cough and stuff, you know, like, but me, I'm used to. So does it mean that then we have to fight, and then we have to fight and exchange because you are selfish? No, it's a compromise. You always have to know that in life you will not get what you want all the time. Sometimes life is full of compromises. I'm talking about good compromise, not bad ones. Sometimes you have to lose your comfort. In the same way, she is losing her comfort for you. Are you getting me? So the relationship, you must attach certain relationship before even the marriage. So that gradually, the one you are going to marry, she's going to become the most important person in your life. Now, let's say that you're about to get married. And your attachment to your mother is so strong. And I'm not saying it's bad to be attached to your mother, but there are some attachments that will even affect your marriage. Because you were a guy. Usually, guys are attached more to their mothers. Girls are attached more to their fathers. It's natural. Now, you are a guy. Your attachment to your mother is said that it's like, literally, there's a place in your heart. That place, only one person can occupy. When your mother occupies that place, your wife is in trouble. Yes. When she occupies that place, your wife is in trouble. You will use your wife to please your mother. So your wife will become like a servant to please. That's the picture all the time. But you should be healthy. You have a healthy emotional disposition to the extent that you will know the place your mother holds in your life. And then you also know that place that your wife can, it's only your wife that can occupy. The same thing applies to you and your father and your husband. So your father is your hero and is your first boyfriend, whatever. And so your father occupies a place in your heart which no man occupies. But your husband must occupy that place. If you don't learn to disengage and engage, you will marry your husband and you will force your husband to serve your father. What I mean is that you will always bend your husband in the direction of your father. You will always try to mold him to look like your father by nagging him, putting pressure on him, by using many weapons to make sure that you see your father in your husband. The same thing that the man too put pressure to see his mother in his wife. If you can't deal with these relationships, your relationship will suffer. And it takes maturity to do that. Because, for instance, if you are a guy, for instance, you have lived with your mother for, let's say, 28 years or 27, 30 years, you are now going to get married. You have eaten her food for 34 years. Now you want to get married. Maybe your mother's food, the way the food is, your mother likes pepper. So she has trained you to like pepper. Are you getting me? Now, your wife too doesn't like pepper. Now you are married. Are you going to go to your mother's place to always eat so that you can continue to enjoy the pepper and refuse to eat your wife's food? Or you are going to force your wife to also do the same thing? Or you are going to work the balance? So before you marry, you must sit down and answer all these questions. Your father was always ironing your clothes for you. Your father, as a lady, your father was always ironing your clothes for you, you know, or your father was always preparing tea for you every evening, making tea for you before you sleep. You know, you can trouble your father, you can do your father is your father. Are you getting me? Sometimes you dare, then your child will call you, daddy, yeah, bruh. Hey, when you leave, daddy, yes, bruh. Yes, several times. And you must go and look at what is happening. Are you getting me? You must go and look at what is happening. So if, let's say, for this morning I was about to go. I entered the room and Carissa was ironing her dress. I said, oh, let me do it for you. So I ironed for her. Now, if, let's say that your father has been ironing for you, or your father has been doing all these things for you, now you marry, and your